Bring us on from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. China, referring to the recent U.S.-sponsored summit on democracy, has said that Washington is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction. Beijing says the U.S. is guilty of inciting division and instigating color revolutions. And the U.S. is accused of trying to divide the world even further. This as entities such as Israel was invited to participate when it practices apartheid on a daily basis, and Taiwan, which is considered a part of China, was invited, and Beijing was not, by the country that actually stands accused of being anything but democratic, the United States of America.
The controversial two-day U.S. Summit for Democracy has been concluded. The event was held virtually with over 100 countries in attendance.
So let's raise up our ambitions and rise up to meet the challenges together. Thank you, and I look forward to following through in the next year on all the commitments we're making individually. Thank you.
The U.S. faced scrutiny over how it went about deciding which countries to invite. China and Russia were the highest profile names left off the invite list. China was especially upset because it was not invited, whereas China was. The island is a major source of contention between China and the U.S. over Washington's military and political support for Taiwan that seeks independence from mainland China.
In efforts to maintain its hegemonistic status, the U.S. has abused the public idea of democracy to serve its selfish interests, instigated division and confrontation under the pretext of democracy, sabotage the UN-centered international system and the international order based on international law, which are all outright acts against democracy.
Beijing slammed Washington over seeking to use democracy as a pretext for imposing hegemony. China says the U.S. is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction to interfere in other countries. Russia also accuses the Biden administration of exhibiting a Cold War mentality that will stoke up ideological confrontation in the world. Questions have been raised on why the U.S. should hold such a summit, a country accused of rights violations at home and abroad. At home, Washington is suffering from problems like racial injustice that has stirred massive nationwide protests over the killing of innocent African Americans. The U.S. has also been criticized for its controversial election system, which is not based on popular vote. A recent Harvard University poll found that over 50% of young people in the U.S. believe that the country's democracy is in trouble. Abroad, the U.S. is the major supporter of Israel, which has occupied Palestinian lands and unleashed atrocities and wars on Palestinian people. It is also the main supplier of arms to countries such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The two countries are involved in the Yemen conflict that has left tens of thousands of innocent people dead. The U.S. itself has also invaded countries like Iraq and Afghanistan under the pretext of bringing democracy and fighting terrorism. But death and destruction have been the only outcome. Many believe that the U.S. describes only its allies as democratic countries just because they comply with its foreign policy dictates and policies. It also resorts to undemocratic means and weaponizes democracy as a tool to pressure countries to align themselves with Washington's interests.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the Spotlight, veteran journalist and political analyst Elijah Macnia out of Brussels. And writer and political commentator Fabrizio Godoni out of Como, Italy.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines. featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me. I'd like to start this off in Brussels. And Elijah, what do you think the overall goal of the summit was?
I think the summit, thank you for having me, first of all.
Thanks for coming.
I think the summit is directed toward the countries who are not submitted to the US hegemony. And I think what is called weapon of mass distraction rather than destruction is democracy that is used by the US in every single country that is refusing to submit to the US hegemony. If you look throughout the history, we know that Iran in 1953, Guatemala in 1954, Indonesia 55, Brazil in the 60s, Chile 73, Nicaragua in the 80s, the examples are infinite where there were elected government that were toppled by the U.S. So therefore, the U.S. is not looking for the democracy per se, but is looking how to con people and then use very beautiful words and values to go and attack countries and states that fear their competition or their presence on the world stage. And if we look at the U.S. best allies in the Middle East, for example, they all are non-democratic states who have never been elected by the population. If we look at the Gulf countries, we hear what the U.S. president is saying about how, for example, President Trump, how he loves dictators, presidents. We see how the attack on Iran that is commanded and directed by a population who elect their own parliament, unlike all the other states, most of the other states in the Middle East. And we see how the election, for example, of President Bashar al-Assad in Syria, we see what's happening in Yemen and the war that is lasting for 6 years by the Americans and the Saudis against a population that opted to put itself under the control of a leadership that represents a large part of the population. This is a real democracy that the Americans are fighting,
okay.
And that is very clear that the Americans use this word and these summits to gather all its vessels, like the Europeans, who just follow the U.S. policy without any argument,
to attack China. Elijah, let me get Fabrizio in on this discussion. Well, Fabrizio, you heard what Elijah said, basically using the word democracy, but being anything but a democracy. And it just seems that the U.S. Is trying to divide the world even more. I mean, that's what Beijing has accused Washington of, inciting division the world over. Your take on this?
Yeah, it seems that this kind of arrangement for the summit on democracy is basically trying to divide in the world. In my opinion, the United States want to show to the world that they have the monopoly of the term of the democracy. That is ridiculous, okay? Because if we see the violation of the principle of the democracy and the human rights in particular in the territory of the United States and outside, we see an incredible violation. We have in the United States the highest incarceration rate of the world. We have they have allowed a system like Guantanamo prison to exist, and we have these infinite wars that are lasting for, let's say, many years from 9/11 and even before. But, you know, if I can say something why, in my opinion, we had this meeting, that we have this summit of democracy, is an agenda of Biden that is at two levels. One is for internal reason and one for external one. Internal reason, we don't have to forget that soon, next year, we will be the midterm election, and Biden wanted to reassure the global elites of the existence of this policy that is in opposition to the Trump one. The second point is a clear message, you know, super clear message to China and especially to Russia, not inviting them, but also what they have, you know, what they have said during this during summit, and also which people they have invited, okay? Because they didn't invite only the prime minister, but they invite also people that doesn't represent at all, doesn't represent nobody, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, let me cross back over to Elijah. You know, there are those that are saying, I mean, China is one. It talks about basically the U.S., it's as if they want another Cold War. It's that they have put up the Berlin Wall again, and it's those countries who are so-called democratic and those who are autocratic, according to Washington. I mean, what is the overall goal here? What really are they trying to do? Is it that they want to increase tensions, or your evaluation of it, Elijah?
I think what the U.S. is afraid of is the growing influence of China that is offering a completely different model than the U.S. The U.S. is offering a model where it is imposing itself on government and population, while China is approaching the population in a different way, where it believes that the construction project, rebuilding of the infrastructure, is very useful for the countries of the of different countries in Africa and in the Middle East to rebuild the society and push away the state of war where everybody can benefit from business. Now, that is extremely damaging to the U.S. hegemony, where the U.S. adopt a completely different model of control and dominance. And the control of dominance, it's offering destruction, tens of thousands of people killed in Afghanistan, hundreds of thousands in Iraq. This is the model that the Americans are offering. And the model that the Chinese are offering is extremely threatening to the U.S. concept and to the image in the Middle East. That is all what it's about.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point that you've just made, Elijah. Let me pick up on that, Fabrizio, with Elijah basically saying it's more of a fear of competition, basically, from the United States because of China. If what Elijah said is true, basically talking about the model that the Chinese use, I mean, wouldn't it be beneficial for the United States to reevaluate and sort of tweak its, if you want to say, business model and change it? I mean, when it sees that it is deteriorating rapidly and the Chinese are continuing to expand across the world, why wouldn't they change the way that they do what they do?
Because I think that, you know, what our guest has said, that I definitely agree, but there is a mechanism that is already existing for decades that is linked to the weapon manufacturing that is, we have seen the data just 2 weeks ago, that the United States has the largest manufactured weapon and selling around the world. For them, this is a business, you know? And, you know, they create money and they destroy the money of the other people through a different kind of war, okay? Through conventional war, hybrid war, and other things. I think that the China for them is a double challenge. It's a mental challenge because it challenges the system, and it challenges also the economy because China is growing very, very fast with the new technology, and now with in the last few years with this infrastructural project, the Belt and Road Initiative, that is already existing in Central Asia and in other parts of the world. So it's a challenge that they have to contain. They use this word contain. In my opinion, they don't have the mind to change their mentality because there are too many interests. There are too many interests in this geopolitics activity.
What about that, Elijah? Too many interests in this the way that it's set up right now. Would you say then that the United States basically has sacrificed itself for a few, for the military-industrial complex, that it is not looking at the interests of Americans or overall for the country, but of that elite few, and that's why we see the situation that we're witnessing, or your evaluation?
The problem is the majority of the Americans don't know what's happening in the rest of the world. Therefore, it is really an American administration that is taking up the policy of remaining on top of the world. Well, that's gone because the era of hegemony and unilateral hegemony of the world is over. When Russia has woken up in 2015 and engaged in the war in Syria to stop the jihadists from overthrowing the Syrian government, and the role of China that is supporting Russia with the United Nations to stop any act of war against Iran and other countries, this is representing a serious challenge to the U.S. The U.S. behavior, from their point of view, is sending soldiers overseas to fight wars and die only for the control of the U.S., but there are no interest for the U.S. to remain, for example, in northeast Syria just to take the oil. In Texas, there is more oil than in the north of Syria. So it's only a question of disturbing and destruction and not the construction of the countries in need. This is the model that the Americans are offering, and the American population is not aware of it. This is why the American administration can get away with it, because they don't have to explain anything to their population. And there is no accountability for whatever the U.S. is doing, and there is a clear violation of the international law when there is no other country, including the European, who are contesting the U.S. behavior anywhere in the world.
Well, Fabrizio, I mean, isn't it ironic when we look at this whole situation that Washington hosted this summit on International Human Rights Day, and the day that journalist Julian Assange's court ordered him to be extradited to the United States for doing nothing more than exposing the abuses of the U.S. military. I mean, where does this democracy, or even the word democracy, fit into this scenario? It takes a lot of arrogance, one could say, for the United States to even hold such a summit and call itself the leader of the democratic world. Your take?
Yeah, it's absolutely it's like a joke, as you said. I mean, about the moment when Assange has basically is prosecuted and has the chance to be extradited in the United States, this one it represents one of the most important human rights that we have: the right of a democracy to the free press, to the information, to the journalism. This one is quite an amazing point, you know. But you know, I would like to say this one, that because I believe that this summit is just a propaganda tool. It's just a propaganda tool. Okay, propaganda works on emotion. It doesn't work on rational. And they have used another day that also has a lot of significance for the American people, the 7th of December, that was the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And you know what's happened the 7th of December? We have the video conference Biden-Putin, one day of resting, because of course they have to rest one day. And then we have this 2 days meeting that is nonsense meeting 9 and 10. So has been created this propaganda tool on the emotion. No, it's just a propaganda things. We don't have to think other than that.
Mm-hmm. You say propaganda, that it's just propaganda. But, well, let me turn this turn to Elijah. Babi Yazot says it's propaganda, but with this type of propaganda, I want to look at the type of division that it can cause and actually escalate the situation, whether we're talking about relations between Washington and Beijing or Washington and Russia. We saw that they invited Taiwan, but of course not China. At the end of the day, this type of conference and dividing between basically drawing that line in the sand between those who are with us and those who are against us, I mean, what does it do? It does not exactly set the stage easy to deal with things in a way that states can actually talk and try to end or lessen hostilities. How do you see it?
Well, I see the propaganda is a very powerful tool to manipulate the popular opinion and blur the truth about the real objective behind it. And the propaganda used by the U.S., which is very powerful, and the U.S. is very good at it, has been used throughout the years by several countries. And we know that this club that was invited to the summit doesn't include countries who have freedom and democracy of their ruling. So basically, who is with us is not, who is not with us is against us. That is a theory introduced also by George Bush when he went to war and invaded Iraq without the permission of the United Nations, but only creating fear and anger. And that is exactly what propaganda uses, and disinformation and misinformation. All these are part of the tools that are essential to the U.S. to try and spread its messages across the world with a very beautiful titles like democracy and human rights. But if we dig a little bit of what the U.S. is doing throughout the world, it's completely far away from respect of human rights, respect of freedom of press, as you rightly mentioned, Julian Assange, and every single law is violated by the U.S., and that is in the name of democracy and in the name of human rights.
Well, Fabrizio, China has talked about with the United States as far as the human rights are, the lack thereof, even inside of the United States itself. It talked about the minority community and what it goes through in the United States, and also talked about color revolutions around the world. So, when we talk about propaganda, on the one hand, we have Americans who have probably witnessed a lot of this oppression. And on the other side, we have people throughout the world who've heard about or witnessed, of course, the United States interference in their country. With that being said, and you also said about propaganda being so effective, so then what needs to be done to counter this? If people are witnessing these abuses by the U.S., but then their propaganda can convince them otherwise. I mean, what needs to be done that people understand the reality of the regime in Washington?
We should talk more about this kind of tool that they use, because the propaganda is used implement basically color revolution that actually. The color revolution that we have experienced, for example, in China, in Hong Kong, basically, it was invented by an American guy that the name is Gene Sharp, that he started to distribute manual and videos and these kind of things. So, first of all, the people, they need to have the knowledge. they need to have the knowledge of what the dangers that color revolution propaganda can bring. But the problem that I can see that all the mainstream media in the Western countries, basically they don't pass this narrative. So it's extremely difficult, I tell you, it's extremely difficult. And the only possibility to bring knowledge to the people is the alternative media.
Okay.
I can tell you, there are many people that now they start.
And social media too. And I'm so sorry I have to interrupt you, but yeah, we're out of time. I appreciate both of you though being with me. Veteran journalist and political analyst Elijah McNear out of Brussels and writer and political commentator Fabrizio Goduni out of Como, Italy. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
تبارك الذي نزل الفرقان على عبده ليكون للعالمين نذيرا
Blessed is he who sent down the criterion upon his servant that he may be to the world a warner.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the very first verse of chapter Furqan. تبارك الذي نزل الفرقان على عبده ليكون للعالمين نذيرا. Blessed is he who sent down the Furqan upon his servant that he may be a warner to the worlds. Previously, we discussed the meaning of the word تبارك and also the meaning of the word نزل. And the fact that if nuzul is in the form of nazzala, it means to send down gradually. And if it is in the form of anzala, it means to send down once and immediately. like in the chapter Qadr, where it says, "Inna anzalnahu fi laylatil Qadr." We sent it down on the night of honor, the night of determination, which is talking about the Holy Quran being sent down immediately and once. Also, about the meaning of the word Furqan, we said that it is the distinction of right and wrong. And the Quranic word Furqan has sometimes been used in the sense of Quran, and sometimes it has been used as the thing, as the miracle that distinguishes truth from falsehood. But as the verses of this Holy Quran suggest, distinguishing truth from falsehood is possible only through piety, because the sins and hatreds, the loves, and all these worldly things cover truth with a thick veil, and they do not allow people to have and use their insights.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
This glorious Quran is the best kind of Quran. It is a means for distinguishing truth from falsehood in all life system of man. It is a means for knowing truth and falsehood during personal and social life, and it is a criterion for thoughts. This Furqan is a criterion for our beliefs, our laws, our judgments, our customs, rules and ethics, and literally all the aspects of our lives. This matter is also important that the verse says, "Who sent down the Furqan upon his servant, تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي نَزَّلَ الْفُرْقَانَ عَلَىٰ عَبْدِهِ." Yes, it is the sincere servitude and submission that makes a man deserving and worthy for receiving Furqan. It is this piety, it is this true servitude that makes such a man deserving for accepting the criteria of knowing truth and falsehood. And more interestingly, the Almighty Allah is introduced through this descending of the Holy Quran for this true servant. The Quranic phrase "lil'alamin" means the people of the two worlds, shows that Islamic religion is universal. It is not limited to a certain kind of region, race and tribe. It is for all the people of the worlds. And this is what the ending part of this verse is trying to mention. The ultimate aim of Furqan is to warn people of the world a warning that leads man to feel responsibility for duties and obligations that are put on his shoulder. Dear listeners, the last point to be mentioned regarding this very first verse of the chapter is that some have used the word lil'alamin for the Prophet ﷺ as being the seal of the prophets. They claim that since the word alamin is not limited to place, it is not limited to chronologically limited or a special time, and it includes all the future generations, this means that this prophet is the seal of the prophets and there will be no other prophets afterwards. I assume that's enough regarding this first verse of the chapter. We hope that the Almighty Allah helps us to pave the way of receiving the divine grace more. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Thousands of Palestinians took to the streets of the Gaza Strip to mark the 34th anniversary of Hamas establishment. Al-Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, also held a military parade, while other participants waved Hamas flags, chanting slogans in support of the resistance group.
We will keep fighting against the Israeli crimes. We will sacrifice our lives. We will keep defending our rights, and we won't remain silent. There will come a day when we all pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque and liberate our lands.
Addressing the rally, senior Hamas official Mahmoud Al-Zahar said celebrating the movement's establishment indicates that Hamas was founded to unite the Palestinian people and lead them in their struggle against Israeli atrocities.
The Palestinian resistance continues in all parts of Palestine, including the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, as long as the Israeli regime violates our rights and grabs our lands. The resistance will respond to all Israeli attacks. We praise our forces for their last battle against the Israeli attacks in Al-Aqsa and their land grab in Sheikh Jarrah. We will always remain committed to our duties of defending Palestine.
Founded in 1987, Hamas is the largest Palestinian resistance movement. Since 2007, it has ruled the besieged Gaza Strip and has since defended the impoverished enclave against four major Israeli wars, including the most recent 11-day conflict that ended in an Egyptian provocative ceasefire in May.
Hamas renewed its promise to liberate our land and defend our people as our struggle against this occupation persists. Palestinian resistance is our shield against this Israeli regime and its violations and crimes against us, and we are certain it won't disappoint us.
People hail the Palestinian resistance for defending their rights and fighting against the Israeli aggression, especially amid the recent wave of normalizing of ties with Israel. Palestinians say they will continue their resistance until the rights of the nation are restored. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Another moment of pride for Iran at the United Nations for its active partnership since joining the world body in 1950. The country has now become a full member of the UN Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. Iran's accession was approved by a unanimous vote at the Special Political Committee of the UN General Assembly on Tuesday. UNSCEAR rarely expanded to include new members, but under the resolution proposed by Australia, four countries were admitted, raising the number to 31. Norway, Algeria, and the UAE were other nations who joined the body. Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, praised the General Assembly's decision to admit Iran into the committee. He expressed Tehran's full support for the body in its scientific endeavors to protect the planet and humans.
Iran reiterates its full support for and cooperation with the UNSCEAR in order to further enhance the infrastructure capacity and training of its personnel, as well as support nuclear safety, protect the public health and the environment from the harmful effects of atomic radiation.
Iran's accession is perceived as a major step forward since the top UN scientific body on nuclear safety has always been under Western influence. As expected, the decision faced stiff opposition from Israel and the U.S. Takht-Ravanchi responded to anti-Iran allegations raised by Israel and the U.S. He said the track record of Tel Aviv and Washington show they are not in a position to oppose Iran's membership to the scientific committee. The Iranian envoy said that while the Israeli regime has flagrantly violated many UN resolutions and defied international efforts to contain weapons of mass destruction, Washington dishonored its obligations under the 2015 nuclear deal. A nuclear scientist has hailed Iran's accession to the committee as a very positive step.
In general, it's a good move for Iran. Iran can have sent some of its scientists to the mission to join the work and the effort of this committee. I think at the end it will be a very positive step for Iran.
The Vienna-based body was set up by a UN General Assembly resolution in 1955 and is affiliated with the UN Environment Program. The committee is tasked with providing information on nuclear radiation and its associated health risks and hazards. The committee's work has served as a basis for evaluating the risk of nuclear exposure and establishing best practices and protective measures.
Shock and anger was expressed outside the Royal Court of Justice in London Friday as the court ruled that jailed journalist Julian Assange can be extradited to the US to face espionage charges. The decision overturned a previous ruling that the WikiLeaks founder could not be forcibly shipped to the US due to mental health concerns.
Of course, we are slightly disappointed. It is very, very difficult to get a fair hearing from a justice system in the United Kingdom in anything which cuts across the perceived interest of the security state, be it the UK or the United States. But this is a stage in the struggle, and the legal battle and the political battle will continue.
Assange, 50, is wanted in the US on allegations of conspiracy to obtain and disclose national defense information after WikiLeaks famously posted thousands of leaked documents, spilling the beans on Western crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. His supporters, however, believe he is a true journalist whose only crime is exposing corruption and war criminals.
I had mixed emotions. I thought that he would be clear today, to be honest. Because, let's face it, all Julian has done is released crimes, not secrets. He's revealed crimes. And when someone reveals crimes, you expect the criminals to be in prison, not the man that reveals the crimes.
Fighting back the tears, Assange's fiancée, Stella Morris, said the decision will be appealed, describing the ruling as an affront to press freedom and democracy.
Julian exposed the crimes of CIA torturers, of CIA killers, and now we know that those CIA killers were planning to kill him too. How can these courts accept an extradition to the country that plotted to kill Julian, that plotted to kill a publisher because of what he published? This goes to the fundamentals of press freedom and of democracy.
Family and supporters of Assange have expressed deep disappointment and anger at today's verdict. However, his legal team have advised us that the fight is far from over, so this won't be the last time that we're out here outside the Court of Justice. Robert Carter, London.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called on his people to be patient and trust his government's new economic plan. In remarks after his cabinet meeting, Erdogan said price increases in Turkey were being caused by greed and importer prices. The president also called on Turkish people who own foreign currencies to take advantage of what he called his new economic model's opportunities.
Turkey is the breakout star of the global economic system that is being restructured with the pandemic. We should completely mobilize our country's potential to this end. No one should ever forget that every penny spent on investment and production is a brick laid for the construction of the future of the great and powerful Turkey.
The plan that President Erdogan was trying to convince Turkish people to put their trust in is considered by analysts as a risk, as its results are not only imperative, but also needs time.
The government wants to bring in more foreign currency by increasing the export and, of course, with the low lira value that might encourage investors. The government is trying to attract foreign investments, thinking that this would help increase income and decrease inflation. And to encourage investors, they are lowering the interest rates. This is a risky policy, however, it can be successful. But the result of such a plan will not show now, and it will leave the current country in a bad economic situation for another few years. I'm not sure the people will support the government until then.
Turkey's lira weakened as much as 2.6% to 13.8070 against the US dollar before Erdogan spoke. Lira has lost 46% of its value to the US currency this year. Many here believe that the promises by the president may not be based on solid ground, especially that the plan is considered by economists to be risky. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
Cinema Verite is the title of the only documentary film festival in Iran. The annual event is a once-in-a-year chance for documentary filmmakers from Iran and the world to get together and get their works evaluated by the festival's jury. It's the first time the annual event is held physically after the coronavirus pandemic forced the organizers to hold it online.
Last year, the event was held with no physical participation and all of the films were screened online. This year, we considered two ways, online and physical screening. And the participation was beyond our expectations. Filmmakers from Japan, South America, Germany, and France have sent their works to the festival.
551 films were submitted to the Cinema Verite Secretariat, out of which 179 works were selected and put to the contest. There's no limit for the themes. They can cover the sufferings of war-ravaged nations or deal with the socioeconomic impacts of the coronavirus. But there's one general yardstick. They need to present an unbiased portrayal of the truth.
There are four main sections of full-length, mid-length, and short documentaries, as well as the special jury prize for international works.
The competing films will be screened both online and in theaters in Iran for a week, and the best works will be honored in the closing ceremony, slated for December 16th. Through the course of the cinematic event, renowned documentarians from Iran and the world will be attending the festival to hold workshops.
Fiction films aim to entertain the audience with the imaginations of a filmmaker. But when it comes to documentaries, filmmakers must avoid the imagination factor, yet inspire people merely with realities. Realities that sometimes are ordinary, but need a second but different look. And that's what makes the competition tough in the week-long course of Cinema Verite. Yusuf Jolly, Tehran.
Demonstrations are a staple of the British democracy. A peaceful protest rally last month against the Israeli ambassador, Tzipi Hotovli, leaving a debate at the London School of Economics. The event passed off peacefully. Police made no arrests. But then came a torrent of criticism from British officials and anti-Semitism allegations from pro-Israel organizations, chiefly from the Community Security Trust, CST, a charity with the purported mission of looking after the Jewish community in the UK. Campaigners say the CST misrepresented the event as violent and linked the protesters to terrorism.
And now pro-Palestine campaigners are fighting back. They have called on the UK's charities regulator, Charity Commission, for an urgent investigation into the Community Security Trust for engaging in political activity.
There is a definition on what a charity is and what a charity should do. And, you know, to go around and receive huge amount of money, not just from the, you know, ordinary individuals, but from the British government. I mean, British government actually gives CST huge amount of money, and they are almost embedded within the Metropolitan Police, could really damage those who are supporters of Palestine because they're well-placed and well-respected. That cannot go on.
The letter accuses the organization of routinely attacking those who organize or take part in campaigning for the rights of the Palestinians with tactics such as character assassination and false accusations, all aimed at shielding Israel from criticism.
What they are doing in the pursuit of defending undefensible, they actually begin to attack and demonize those who support Palestinian cause. And, you know, they do it to the Muslims who are doing that, non-Muslims, even those from the Jewish community that honorably is standing and defending the right of the Palestinians.
The pro-Palestine campaigners have also criticized the preferential treatment the Community Security Trust and other pro-Israel organizations receive in the UK, while their Muslim counterparts are frequently demonized. They say the ball is now in the charity regulator's court to hold the CSD to account or throw its own integrity into question. Saeed Purza, London.
The seventh round of talks aimed at reviving the nuclear agreement, known as the JCPOA, resumes in Vienna between Iran and the remaining signatories, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China. Iranian lead negotiator and deputy foreign minister Ali Bagheri Kani says the removal of U.S. sanctions will pave the way for progress in talks on Tehran's return to full compliance.
Resolving differences on sanctions removal requires the serious will and practical readiness of the other side. Once the will is there, we can move toward sanctions removal, and that will create a serious opportunity for progress in talks, especially on Iran's nuclear measures.
EU coordinator Enrica Mora described the negotiations as very difficult, saying there were different positions that the sides needed to marry.
We approach this with the realism necessary to get an agreement, because it's difficult, because there are different positions, because some points are still extremely open, and we have to close them, and we have to close them, and we don't have all the time of the world.
The seventh round of talks began last week, during which Iran presented the other sides with two draft proposals, which it says are based on the 2015 nuclear agreement and the text that all sides had been working on over the previous six rounds. Bagheri said he believed the other sides had come back to Vienna with a more serious will to resume the work.
What I felt today was different from what I had felt on Friday. I feel that the other side demonstrated a more serious will to enter into effective and result-oriented talks.
The expert working group focusing on Iran's nuclear commitments is expected to resume its work on Friday, as talks also continue among various delegations on the issue of sanctions removal. As to the duration of the seventh round of talks, no official timetable has been announced yet. Homolesky, Vienna.
The United States always proclaims itself a leader for promoting democracy worldwide. In line with such mentality, the administration of President Joe Biden hosts a long-promised two-day virtual event, calling it the Summit for Democracy. The event on Thursday and Friday will be attended by over 100 countries. The White House says the gathering plans to defend democracy and human rights at home and abroad. China, which has not been included in the list of invitees, has challenged the U.S. claim of upholding democracy.
No matter how the U.S. glosses over itself, its true face of seeking hegemony under the guise of democracy has long been exposed to the world. The so-called Summit for Democracy will only go down in history as a manipulator and a saboteur of democracy.
Russia, which has also been excluded from the summit, already slammed it as a product of America's Cold War mentality, and warned that it will stoke up ideological confrontation and a rift in the world. This is a stance that experts have doubled down.
I think it's a dangerous game that the US is playing. They're sort of drawing a line of division in the world and creating an us against them environment, just as they did with the Cold War against the Soviet Union.
The inclusion of some invitees, such as Israel, has also drawn strong criticism given the atrocities the regime has committed against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Irrespective of the names of invitees and those that have been excluded, the U.S. military adventurism seems to be overshadowing the summit. America's invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan and its support for the Saudi-led war on Yemen, which have resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of innocent lives, challenge the U.S. claim of democracy promotion. Besides, humanitarian impacts of U.S. sanctions on countries that refuse to give in to its hegemony contradict such a claim. Ironically, the U.S. itself has a checkered record of human rights due to its racist approach toward minority groups, including African Americans. Advocates, analysts, and international observers have also cast a spotlight on voting rights in the United States ahead of the summit.
In recent times, clearly, the United States is not functioning as a democracy. It is functioning as a plutocracy. A democracy is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. A plutocracy is a government of the 1%, by the 1%, for the 1%.
A recent Harvard University poll found that over 50% of young people in the U.S. believe that the country's democracy is in trouble. With such an outlook, it remains to be seen how the U.S. wants to promote global democracy by holding a summit.
The European Commission says in recent years, EU member states have been intimidated by foreign countries in the area of trade. A new policy proposal has been unveiled to counter the use of economic coercion perpetrated by non-EU nations.
The EU
considered the Iran nuclear deal to be one of its greatest foreign policy achievements. Do you think if we had more mechanisms like this in place before now, the nuclear deal would have been saved by now?
It's not the instrument which is there to resolve all problems, and we are clearly